right. We're joined by Congressman Jared Huffman. Once again, thank you so much for coming.
Good to see you, Larry.
I know you're a busy man, so we appreciate your kindness and generosity in talking on this silly little radio station.
It's a good station. It's just been too long. It's been a couple of years, I think.
Yeah, I think the last time we talked was right before the last re-election, so it has been either right before or right after. So it's been a while, but it's good to see you again. We keep an eye on you.
I know.
So, you know, you're not getting away with anything. Let's talk about, first of all, the proximate reason why you're here. I mean, I know you come back and visit us on a regular basis, but you're up here for a couple of specific things, one of which has to do with the Open Door Clinic and also presenting an award to Six River Solar.
Yes, I just came from a very exciting groundbreaking in Fortuna. So this will be the new state-of-the-art 30,000 square foot Open Door Community Clinic that is going to serve this whole Eel River Valley, I think, for generations to come.
And this is partly, I mean, partly or maybe primarily made possible by federal money that was granted.
It's a real combination. So there is about a $10 million low-interest loan from the USDA for rural economic development, but the McLean Foundation has stepped up in a big way with several million dollars already, and I think will be part of helping bridge the remaining gap in the capital program, the Humboldt Area Foundation, lots of other individuals. So it's remarkable, actually, the way this community has stepped up.
Oh, awesome. I want to revisit this issue a little bit because I have some sort of broader questions about healthcare policy, but I also wanted to make note of the fact that you presented an award to Six River Solar a little bit earlier today. Tell us what that's about.
Well, I do this Sustainable North Coast Award about every month or so, and I look for a small business that is doing good by the environment, by the community, by the various metrics that we would look to, you know, for a good corporate citizen. And Six River Solar is an interesting place. They've been doing this way before it was cool. It's been like 30-plus years. And they're sort of really coming into their own now, and their volume is way up. They are pioneering some of their own configurations of these systems to help people either go off the grid or be as grid independent as they want to be. And basically, they're helping us address climate change. So I wanted to recognize that.
Nice. And I'm happy to report that the PACE financing is finally in place up here.
Yes.
And
It's good to see. It's good for consumers, homeowners. It's also good that the federal government's starting to get out of the way, because that has been one of the real impediments, is that the federal home financing authorities have refused to allow these PACE agreements to move forward under federally insured mortgages, which is most mortgages. Mm-hmm. So we think we've finally cleared that away, and this program should grow.
I hope so. It makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Now, turning back to healthcare policy, I think that if you say that there's a crisis, that might be overstating it a bit. But we're getting, you know, in that range, particularly in rural areas here. I mean, I had a This is oversharing, but I had a schedule of colonoscopy, and it was 8 months.
We're both in the over 50 club, yes. So we can talk about these things.
That's the gift of getting older, one of the many. But, you know, it was 8 months before I could schedule something, and quite frequently if I need to see a doctor, or I have a difficulty getting in right away. And I'm fortunate because I have Obamacare and I have insurance and things like that. This seems like a really difficult problem to solve.
I think it is. And the problem you're referring to is happening in every rural part of my district, because it's just really hard to recruit and retain good healthcare providers, good physicians.
Which is most of your district, right?
Most of my district. Yeah, I've got, you know, parts of Sonoma and all of Marin County. Most of Marin County are more metropolitan. Although I've got community health clinics that are filling needs in the rural parts even of Marin County. So I've really come to appreciate, you know, the space that they occupy in our healthcare system. And that's probably going to be part of the answer going forward, is growing systems like this Open Door Community Clinic system. It's backfilling in places like Fortuna, where you've got a bunch of, frankly, elderly physicians that are starting to retire, that are moving out of the area. They look at the regulations, they look at the electronic medical record requirements, things like that, and a lot of them are just hanging it up. It's too expensive, it's too much hassle. And as that happens, you know, there hasn't been a backfilling with other mm-hmm. providers. And you get some communities where you may only have one physician that can do a colonoscopy in a certain right. region, or one urologist or whatever the case may be. The open door clinic, though, is getting big enough that it can attract professionals. It can do a lot of telemedicine. They've got the resources to do that. And as a federally qualified health clinic, you know, they can do certain sweeteners to attract and retain mm-hmm. providers that just, you know, regular physician's office can't have.
Okay. Let's talk about Obamacare a mm-hmm. little bit, because it's I think it's been successful, particularly for very low income people. We obviously have added people to the rolls of the insured through the program. It's certainly not perfect. And mm-hmm. I personally would say not great.
Yeah,
I like having my health insurance separate from my work, and I like a lot of things about it. But it certainly is not in its final form, and I think that it needs to change in order to meet its overall objectives.
Totally agree. We can't, just because it has brought millions of people under the umbrella of insurance and made it possible for them to get care when they have some pre-existing condition or when they have some terrible unforeseen illness. I mean, that's all really great, but we can't, you know, overlook the flaws that remain in the system. Then premiums are going up. There's not enough competition. There's not enough robust network coverage for, especially in rural areas. So we got a long way to go to get this right.
And insurance companies are dropping out, or at least saying they're going to.
Some are, because some of the federal subsidies are starting to be removed, as was the original design. Mm-hmm. Under the Affordable Care Act. So we need to take a look at that. And, you know, I believe we're going to need a public option in there for lots of reasons.
Right. Yeah. And I think that was, well, you'd know better than I, but I believe it was dropped for political expediency.
Yeah,
I mean, it was in part of the thinking in the original.
It was before I got to Congress, so I've only heard secondhand how it all went down. But I think that's exactly right. Now, the good news is our Democratic nominee, Hillary Clinton, I think thanks to some pushing in a big way by Bernie Sanders and his campaign, has taken a real forward-leaning position on allowing older folks who don't yet qualify for Medicare to buy in early. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be very helpful, and also a public option. So I like what I'm hearing there. If we can win some elections and get the next Congress interested in continuing to reform health care, we can do some good things.
Tough, though.
Yeah.
Well, all these things are tough, I guess. Okay, switching ground a little bit. This, I think, is a fairly simple question. But there's, as you know, there's a section of 101 in Del Norte County that is unstable, subject to landslides. And over the years, tens of millions of dollars have been spent fixing it up. There's a project underway to come up with a permanent bypass. Now, there's another radio station in this market that's running PSAs every day, urging people to desperately contact you and others to secure the funding. And when I look at the timetable for this project, it doesn't seem, they're talking about beginning construction maybe in like 2036. Is there an urgency? I mean, is there a danger that funding for this is not going to come through?
There's huge urgency because, frankly, the situation with Last Chance Grade is worse than what you just described. It's moving as we speak. It moves every week, every month, every year, and it will collapse and it will fail. It's just a matter of time. And so we can only keep these Band-Aids going every few years where we spend millions and millions of dollars adding layers of asphalt, doing temporary shoring up with the retaining. We can only do that for so long before, frankly, the whole moving hillside just slips away. Anyone who tells you that I and my team and the stakeholders we're working with are on a course to not begin construction until the late 20th. That's just not true. We're very passionate about a quick solution, but you got to also do it right. And that's why we created the stakeholder process, because you're going to have a new route for Highway 101. And there are no easy solutions. There's old growth timber. There's other geologically unstable areas. So you got to get the right people around a table. You got to do the right analysis. You got to buy in from all sorts of stakeholders. And we've got folks around the table that range from Indian tribes to private timber owners, timberland owners, to local government reps, to EPIC and the environmental mm-hmm. community. All of those are essential participants in the solution. And I think we can get everybody to at least something they can accept as an alternate route. Once that happens, I think we'll be able to move a lot faster. And we're doing the geotechnical and other studies as we go. And by the way, we're seeking emergency federal funding so that we could break ground very quickly, potentially. And that effort is underway in earnest.
So then the timetable that's laid out on the Last Chance Grade website, mm-hmm. is inaccurate.
That might be the timetable that a normal project of this size, of this character, would proceed under. But we're trying to qualify as an emergency project uh-huh. Under a federal transportation policy that would dramatically expedite that.
Okay. I was going to ask you because, yeah. I mean, obviously, if that fails and 101 is cut off, right. the economic and public safety consequences are, I mean, that's a catastrophe.
Right. And the program that we are hoping to use is, frankly, the same one that was used near Confusion Hill to uh-huh. very quickly expedite a major fix there.
That
so
was
there's,
quick.
There is some precedent.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That was very impressive how yeah. quickly that'll happen. All right. Well, so contacting people in Washington and urging funding.
I welcome the contact, but just know that the fire is already lit. Yeah. I worry about this every time, every day, because I represent these communities, and I understand, you know, how urgent it is. We're working very well, I believe, and I think we're on the right track. But folks should stay engaged, and eventually,
there's not a danger that funding is not going to come through once a solution is. I mean, well, there's always hypothetical, but
this is hundreds of millions of dollars that we're going to need. It's a huge project. So look, if we fail to secure these emergency dollars that we're going for right now that would enable us to move the time frame up, then I do worry about this, and we're going to have to have a plan B of some kind.
Okay. All right. Now, shifting gears once again, since this is Humboldt County, we have to talk about weed for a little bit.
Right.
As you know, Prop 64 is on the ballot, and you are a supporter of it, a sponsor of it.
I am.
What motivated you to sponsor? Why do you think that we ought to vote yes on Prop 64?
Well, I've said for a long time that we've got to get over prohibition. And I've never expected the first iteration of a new policy to be perfect. I don't think Prop 64 is perfect. I'm sure there are going to be unintended consequences in it too. But I would rather work on that going forward in a post-prohibition policy framework than continue to deal with this dysfunctional status quo that we have and sort of pine away for the perfect solution out there somewhere. I'll take Prop 64 and I'll keep working to make it better as we go forward.
Okay. I mean, and as you're also aware, there are county, Humboldt County is moving forward
with its own
plan. Would you imagine that if Prop 64 is passed, that will change the plans that Humboldt County is?
There may need to be some fine-tuning, but I think it's perfectly compatible with the leadership we're seeing from Humboldt County and a few others.
Okay. Yeah. And it's unlikely, even though I think the attitude nationwide is changing. But it seems to me unlikely that much is going to happen in Washington in this regard. So you end up with situations like they have in Colorado, where it's legal in Colorado, but the businesses can't get bank loans and
That's right. Can't
have bank accounts because something needs to be done on the federal level to enable that.
But you
do
can't,
you see anything like that coming?
Well,
down?
I think change is coming, and you can't overstate the significance of California joining the ranks of Colorado and Washington and Oregon. You'll have the entire West Coast of the U.S. now with a somewhat unified legalization framework for adults. That's going to make a difference in Washington. We're already moving in the right direction, even in this Congress. We have we've voted in the House to enable physicians at the VA to counsel their patients on medical cannabis. I mean, we've had a few on hemp. We've had a few minor breakthroughs, and we've even had some amendments that called for a vote on completely deferring to states on marijuana policy, and they haven't passed, but they've come closer than a lot of people would think. So this is a huge election year. There's been a lot more talk about marijuana policy in this presidential election than any I remember in recent history. And if California approves Prop 64, I think a bunch of new members of Congress are going to show up in January, and we may have a chance at actually fixing some problems in federal law.
At least, yeah, maybe just at least a little. Although I read there's an economist at the University in Washington who said, well, you know, if you're a small mom and pop grower, maybe you don't want the people to access bank accounts.
If you're a small mom and pop grower that actually wants to have bank accounts, that wants to not worry about who's knocking at your door or who's planning a home invasion. Right. You know, there's lots of reasons why a regular mom and pop grower would want to operate under a legalized, regulated framework.
Sure, of course. Yeah. All right, moving on now. Yeah. I was worried as I was preparing the question that I was going to ask you because I mean, I voted for you twice.
Thank you.
The first time, admittedly, just because you were a Democrat, I didn't know that much about you. The second time, with enthusiasm. So I was worried that most of my questions are going to come across as, why are you so great, Jared? So I tried to find something controversial.
I ask myself that a lot,
sure,
Larry.
It's an issue. Oh, by the way, just as a quick aside, mm-hmm. I was reading your bio, and I was reminded that you were on the number one ranked volleyball team in the entire world. And you won the U.S. championship. How come Olympics wasn't part of your trajectory?
Well, because the Olympics fell in the year 1988, and I got accepted to law school in the fall of 1987. So I had a choice to make. Hang around and try to fight for that last seat on the bench on the Olympic team, and I would have had a gold medal if I could have done that, or get on with my life. And, you know, I can't second guess. Things have worked out pretty nicely for me.
But some of the people that you played with on the championship team went on and won gold.
They won gold in Seoul in 1988. One of my teammates, Karch Karai, is now coaching the women's Olympic team in Rio. So I've been following it. I'm still very much into volleyball. It's fun.
All right. A local news blog ran your press release when you were irritated that the House shut down the public debate on your amendments to ban the rebel flag at government cemeteries and also sales and gift shops and so forth. And this will surprise you, but in the comment section of the blog, there were a lot of negative comments.
Typical, actually, on this issue. I get a lot of positive support from people that I run into, but, you know, it's a different ecosystem, this sort of online commentary that occurs on the internet. And frankly, a lot of the commenters come out of the Deep South. Oddly enough, they troll around and find this stuff. So I might have had a few constituents that took exception that I was trying to limit the displays of the Confederate battle flag. Most people understood that I was talking only about on federal property. I always need to explain it, though, because people think I'm trying to censor or rewrite history. I'm really not. There's some special policies that we've allowed for a number of years in our national cemeteries, for example, that allow these groups, these pro-Confederacy groups, to go and mass decorate graves with Confederate flags. We don't allow any other decoration of graves, with the exception of a little U.S. flag that can be put out on Memorial Day or on Veterans Day. So I just think it's time to get real about that. That is a symbol of insurrection. It's a symbol to many Americans of racism, of lynching, of murder, of the KKK. That's really when that particular symbol got traction. People think it was the flag of the Confederacy in the Civil War. It wasn't. It was the flag of Robert E. Lee's Army of Northern Virginia. And most of the graves they decorate with it never fought under that flag. Those soldiers. And by the way, they're not even their ancestors. There's no familial connection. So I think we've hit a point as we struggle with racial tension in this country where it's just time on federal property with taxpayer dollars to shut that down.
Okay. The criticism of one of the comments I read, the criticism was more along the lines of, well, it just says, with all the drug addicted transient homeless populations, illegal camping, environmental degradation, et cetera, this is what Huff is working on?
Well,
he's working a monumental sidestep from doing real work.
I love comments like that. You answer it by saying we can walk and chew gum. I'm perfectly capable of working on all those other things. And if you look a little closer, you'll see that I am. But it doesn't mean that we don't also need to work on racial justice and reconciliation, which, you know, if you're an African American in the United States, that flag is basically what a swastika means to Jewish people. So we need to just be honest about that.
I agree. We're running low on time. So let me just skip ahead to, do you feel like making an election prognostication?
Hillary.
You're sure?
I'm pretty darn sure. I think the only question is, does she squeak out an electoral victory, or is this a landslide? And we've certainly had a two-week period that looked like that we were positioning for a potential landslide. But the one piece that disturbs me is that, as bad as it's been for Trump these past couple weeks, he seems to have a floor on his support that he never goes beneath, no matter what outrage, no matter what controversy. And it's around like 40-42% of the people. If that really is a hard baked-in floor, then no matter what happens the next 80 days, we've got our work to do to make sure that he doesn't somehow win this thing.
Well, that leads in nicely to a sort of related question, because it's easy to make fun of Trump, especially when he ejected a baby.
Yeah,
that was my absolute
favorite. Get the baby out of here.
It's easy to make Trump jokes and to laugh at it, but he obviously has tapped into a sentiment of, you know, there's a certain group of yes racist and bigots that
misogynists,
but there also are, you know, real people who have real problems.
Yep.
and have been really sort of left aside by what happens in Washington,
right,
particularly on the economic front.
That's
so
right.
What do Democrats need to do to reach this group and come up with things,
right,
that are actually going to help?
Well, I think you're hitting on it right there. We need to focus on the regular Americans who are not racists, who are not misogynists, who don't have some twisted notions that Trump's rhetoric appeals to, and reach out to the folks that are somehow drawn to him because they've just given up on an economy that's left a lot of them behind. That we can do. We absolutely have a better message for people like that, because Democrats are talking about massive new investments in infrastructure that we will actually finance. We're talking about the kind of reforms that will address, at least to some degree, income inequality and the economy that works for everyone. Trump just rolled out his economic team this last week. Did you see them?
Yes.
I mean, it's a bunch of white billionaires from Wall Street. If you really think these are the people that are going to ride to the rescue for the middle class, for the folks that have been left behind, they're going to hold Wall Street accountable, give me a break. This is going to get worse under a President Trump. And anyone who thinks that he wouldn't turn around and sign giveaway trade deals is sorely mistaken. He's said he's against NAFTA, he's against the TPP, but he's never really articulated what a Trump trade deal would look like. Mm-hmm. And at least on the Democratic side, we have. We've said that the TPP and similar deals don't do enough on labor standards, that the investor-state dispute resolution that would allow a company in some other country to challenge our workplace safety laws or environmental standards, that's got to go. We won't support anything. We've articulated what fair trade would look like. Donald Trump hasn't told us anything about what a Trump trade deal would look like, and there's every reason to worry about it.
Well, how would you respond to someone who says, I could agree with you if you're the economically displaced blue collar worker, right, you shouldn't be looking to the Republicans for your salvation. But have Democrats really done that much to help that group?
We haven't done enough, clearly. And in the past, Democrats have gone along with some of these bad trade deals, and I don't think have stood their ground the way they should. So once again, in this election year, I think we can thank the Sanders campaign and others who fought to make fair trade a pretty significant part of the presidential debate. And Hillary Clinton had to come out and oppose the TPP. And I think she's boxed in now, and I think the next Congress is going to hold her to a very high standard because of what happened in this campaign. That's a good thing, and I think it should give people confidence in what will happen under her administration.
Do you have? I know we got to go, so I'll just wrap it up real quick. But do you have any optimism that things will change on the Hill between the, like, will the Democrats take the House and the Senate?
So to take the Senate, we need 4 seats. I think that's going to happen. I could almost count the Republican senators that are going to lose, you know, right off the top of my head. You look at Kelly Ayotte, you look at potentially Marco Rubio, you look at Portman in Ohio, Kirk in Illinois. I mean, it's really easy to come up with a much longer list than that of very vulnerable Republican senators. And with the wave building against Trump, I think we take back the Senate. Can we get the 30 seats we need to take back the House? Most analysts would tell you they can map out a scenario that would maybe get you to 20. But when wave elections develop, you win seats you never thought you were going to win. And so it's completely foreseeable if real separation between Clinton and Trump occurs that we could do it.
Okay. All right. Well, Congressman Huffman, thank you so much. You should mention that you are yourself up for re-election this year, although
I am.
Your seat seems pretty safe. But if your opponents are listening to this, equal time is available.
And that's fair enough, and I sure appreciate the chance to talk to you and your listeners, Larry.
All right, thanks very much. I appreciate it.